Hey, good morning, guys.
How are you? It's an honor to be able to close out our study looking at these great men in the Old Testament, these men of faith. Pastor Adam, I wasn't here last time that we shared, but I was told that he shared from the life of Elisha. And Elisha is amazing because he was the bald prophet who had the ability to sick bears on people who made fun of him. And I could have really used that ability in junior high when I was teased a lot. And I thought it'd be fitting, actually, to close out our study by looking at Elisha's mentor, Elijah, because he is one of the spiritual giants. He's considered the greatest prophet in the Old Testament. And if you look at his life and his ministry, it's easy to understand why he's considered one of the spiritual giants and one of the greatest prophets in the Bible. I mean, for one, he gets taken up to heaven in a flaming chariot. And this is just a good way to go. I mean, that would be an awesome, awesome way to go. But he also just makes an appearance out of nowhere at Jesus' transfiguration. Remember that? You know, Peter is up with Jesus, with John, and he looks over and he sees Moses, Jesus, and Elijah. And then Peter says, "Hey, you know, Jesus, we can turn this into like a men's camping event, and I can set up tents." And then Jesus says, "Peter, you just don't know what you're talking about." But it's amazing. I mean, Elijah is at Jesus' transfiguration, and that seems like an important event. And not everybody in the Old Testament got an invitation to that party when Jesus revealed his glory. And I think it just shines light on how important the life and ministry of Elijah really was, what kind of guy he really was. James tells us that he was a man of like passions like us, but he was a fervent man of faith and prayer. I mean, unbelievable faith, unbelievable prayer. And we see that coming out, that unbelievable, fearless faith as Elijah raises this widow's son from the dead. He prays and he has the ability to control weather patterns, so he stops the rain for 3 years and 6 months. And lest we forget, I mean, his claim to fame is when he brought the smackdown on the prophets of Baal on Mount Carmel. It would have been like filling the Moda Center, like with all of like the false prophets in the day, lining everybody up. And if you remember, he says, you know, "You cry out to your God, and all of you 800 guys are taking on me. So bring it." And they cut themselves, they cry out to your God, and then he starts talking smack, if you remember. It's one of my favorite moments in the Old Testament where he says, "Well, maybe your God, maybe he's asleep, maybe you need to wake him up, maybe he's relieving himself." I mean, he's just bringing the smackdown on these prophets. And then he prays, and it not only sets his sacrifice on fire, but he has doused it in water just to show off for good measure. This is an amazing, amazing guy. Unbelievable faith. He was so faithful. But what I appreciate about Elijah is the Bible doesn't just give us a window into his victories and his successes. It also shines a light on this awkward moment where Elijah just hits a wall and he runs out of gas. I mean, the greatest prophet in the Old Testament, we see him in 1 Kings 19, a passage we're going to dig into today, just hitting a wall. Marathon runners, they talk about hitting a wall, a moment in a race where your mind and your body are begging you to quit. Now, I know you probably can't discern this from my physique today, but I was a cross-country runner in high school because I wasn't coordinated enough for any other sport, but I could run in a straight line. And I remember our coach would tell us, you know, you're going to hit a wall. Like, you're going to hit this point in the race where you're going to want to do nothing but just die and throw in a towel, and your body's going to burn through all of your glycogen, all your energy, no matter how many carbs you've eaten, you're going to hit this point where you want to give up. So you need to learn to run through the wall. Like, you need to learn when you, the wall is coming in this race. If you race long enough and you give it your all, you're going to hit the wall. But here's what you need to know. When you, that moment comes, I don't want you to give up. I want you to dig in, and I want you to run harder. And this morning, what I love about the story we're going to read is it gives us wisdom and encouragement as men to not throw in the towel when we actually hit a wall in life. Because although some of us can maybe connect with Elijah's victories, all of us, I imagine, have had moments in our life where we just hit a wall. We just run out of gas in our marriage, in our business, in our walk with the Lord. And that's where 1 Kings 19 has some incredible encouragement for us. If you guys have your Bible or you have your phone and you want to pull up 1 Kings 19, we're going to look at this incredible story of Elijah today. All right, starting in verse 1. Ahab told Jezebel all that Elijah had done, how he'd killed all the prophets with the sword. Then Jezebel sent a messenger to Elijah saying, "So may the gods do to me and more also if I do not make your life as the life of one of them by this time tomorrow." Then he was afraid, and he arose and ran for his life and came to Beersheba, which belongs to Judah, and left his servant there. But he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness and came and sat down under a broom tree. And he asked that he might die, saying, "It is enough. Now, O Lord, take away my life, for I'm no better than my father's." And he lay down and he slept under a broom tree. And behold, an angel touched him and said to him, "Arise and eat." And he looked, and behold, there was at his head a cake baked on hot stones and a jar of water. And he ate and he drank and he laid down again. And the angel of the Lord came a second time and touched him and said, "Arise and eat, for the journey is too great for you." And he arose and ate and drank and went in the strength of that food 40 days and 40 nights to Horeb, the Mount of God. There he came to a cave and he lodged in it, and behold, the word of the Lord came to him, and he said to him, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" And he said, "I have been very zealous for Yahweh, the God of hosts. For the people of Israel have forsaken your covenant, thrown down your altars, killed your prophets by the sword, and I only am left, and they seek my life to take it away." And he said, "Go out and stand on the mount before the Lord. And behold, Yahweh, the Lord, passed by, and a great and strong wind tore the mountains and broke in pieces the rocks before the Lord, but the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake, but the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, the sound of a low whisper." This is an amazing story. I love this story because I think it teaches us that even the strongest of us men, we have moments where we're burned out and we run out of gas and we hit a wall. And I love that the Lord comes to Elijah in this moment of weakness where he's ready to throw in the towel, and he encourages the guy. So what I want to look at today is how we can respond to challenges in life where we hit a wall. We feel like, man, I don't have it in me to make it through this thing. There's four things that we can glean from this story that will help us to actually endure when we run into trials in life. And the first thing from this story that we learn is that rest is really important. Rest is really important. The first thing that Elijah does is the angel comes to him and says, you need to rest your body. I think it's so interesting, it's amazing, and I love this about God in the passage, that when Elijah hits a wall, the Lord does not send an angel to bring him a theology lesson. That comes later. The first thing that God does is he sends an angel to bring him breakfast, to bring him cake, to bring him water, and to tell him to get a good night's rest. So it's right there in verses 6 and 8. It says, and he looked, and behold, there was at his head a cake baked on hot stones and a jar of water, and he ate and he drank and he laid down again. And twice this angel says, I want you to eat and sleep, which actually makes perfect sense because Elijah is physically exhausted. He's been running a really, really long time. So a little bit of backstory on why Elijah hit this physical wall. He has been running for his life a really, really long distance. In chapter 18, he's actually been pursued by King Ahab. The chapter closes, and Ahab is on his chariot, and he's chasing Elijah for about 18 miles. And it says that the hand of the Lord was on Elijah. He was given like this cross-country like spiritual gift, and he outruns the chariot. But then he actually makes his way back in chapter 19 to Beersheba, and he gets word that the queen Jezebel, the pagan queen, which he is hoping will repent, that she is after him and she's going to kill him. And he makes another 120-mile voyage. He keeps running for his life. And so that's like five marathons. So it makes perfect sense why he's hungry and why he's exhausted and why he is actually hit a wall, because he's been running for his life. And so the angel comes to him, and before God addresses some of his deeper needs and begins to really, really deal with his heart and his vision of God, he actually starts with Elijah's physical body. Vince Lombardi, the famous coach of the Packers, once said, fatigue makes cowards of us all. And isn't it so true in life that you and I, we just don't cope well when our physical body is tired or we're hungry? Many times, the godliest thing that we can do is to eat well and get more rest. And so many times as men, I think that underneath some of the other areas in our life that are out of control, we're just not eating well, and we're not resting well. And you need to know that although the Lord, he absolutely cares about our heart and our soul, he cares about our bodies as well. I mean, if you think about it, Jesus summarized the law and the prophets, all the commands in the Old Testament. He boiled them down to two. And he said, there's nothing more important. Here's the greatest commandment. Love God with all of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body, your strength, which really should be translated body. It's referring to our physical self. So love God like with your mind. Love God with your heart, with all of your soul. So there's our immaterial part of us, but love God with your body and love your neighbor as yourself. And so God cares about every aspect of our life. And many times when we neglect our physical needs, and we're not resting well, we're not eating well, we're tired, we're burned out, at least in my experience, that's when I'm really, really open to burning out, to depression. My wife and I, one of the rules in our relationship is we don't fight when we're tired or hungry. We can, either one of us, if we're tired or hungry this week, we've had a sick kid with like a stomach bug who's been up all night. We are not having deep conversations about how satisfied we are in our marriage right now. And we're not fighting through that. It's just that's a bad time to really, really try to address big issues. First eat, first sleep, then comes really the deeper work that God does in this story. So after the angel gives Elijah a good night's rest and gives him some food and water, he begins addressing some of the deeper level frustrations and fears and emotions that have been weighing Elijah down for a really long time. And things that emotionally he's been running from, God actually begins to address his emotions. So after you rest, this story teaches us that we need to release our fears and frustrations. So first comes the physical burnout, and then God addresses the emotional burnout or the emotional wall that Elijah has hit in this story. And look at where Elijah is at in this passage emotionally. He's a mess. In verse 4, we read, he went a day's journey into the wilderness. He came down and sat under a broom tree, and he asked that he might die, saying, "It is enough now, O Lord, take away my life, for I am no better than my fathers." I mean, this guy is defeated. He's discouraged. If he was meeting with a psychologist, he was suicidal. I mean, he has given up hope. He's really wrestling with despair. And so many times as men, I think that we repress our feelings and our emotions until we just hit a wall and we're just kind of underneath the broom tree with Elijah and we're burned out. And many times we just no longer have any strength left in us. And that, I think as men, we have a really, really unhealthy definition of strength, because we think that if I just repress my emotions and keep running, I can make it through this. But that actually is a really, really screwed up, bogus perception of what it means to be a man of strength and faith. Because when we repress our emotions, that they tend to kind of build up like lactic acid. I mean, they don't go anywhere. And they begin to eat at us. And the unprocessed pain of life. Sometimes I meet with guys and they've just been repressing anger and repressing depression, repressing fear and insecurity, stuffing all this stuff down. And I get to meet men that are kind of sitting underneath the broom tree, and they're just ready to give up. They're ready to give up on their walk with God. They're ready to give up on their marriage because they haven't been honest about their battles. They haven't been honest about their sexual dissatisfaction. And they're just burned out. They've been repressing all this stuff, and they just keep on running. And you just need to know, no matter how resilient or strong you are, if you ignore your heart, sooner or later, you're going to hit a wall. You're going to hit a wall. So I think as men, you just need to realize that the Lord comes after Elijah, and he's trying to crack him open and get him to release the fears and the frustrations that he's been really running on for a long, long time. So we see what God does, I love this, is he invites Elijah into a cave for a counseling session. It's a counseling session in a cave. It's in verses 9 and 10. After he has a good night's rest, God invites him into this cave. He came to a cave. He lodged in it. Behold, the word of the Lord came to him, and he said, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" And Elijah responds, and he says, "I've been very jealous for the Lord, for the God of hosts, for the people of Israel have forsaken your covenant. They've thrown down your altars. They've killed your prophets with the sword, and I only am left, and they seek my life to take it away." What Elijah is essentially saying in this passage is, "God, I've been living for you. I'm your guy. I'm your prophet. I've been doing all the right things that you've asked me to do. And look at where it's got me. I'm all alone. I'm depressed. There's nobody else. They're trying to kill me. I'm bitter. I'm angry. I'm no better than my fathers who were unfaithful to you." And he just vents. I mean, back in verse, where he says, I've had enough. Verse 4, he says, "It's enough now, O Lord." In the Hebrew, it's just one word. It's just enough. It's just rob. Enough. He's just had enough. And instead of God coming to him and just correcting him and saying, "Man, stop whining, like, keep running, you need to go." What's interesting about this story is God just lets Elijah vent. And he doesn't rebuke him. There's no rebuke in 1 Kings 19. He just vents. He releases to God his fears, his frustration, where he's really, really at. And God just allows him to let those things out, to release them. And you just need to know, I mean, God can handle whatever you're feeling right now. He actually wants that raw emotion and where you're really at versus a fake religious prayer. God actually, you need to know, he prefers the real, raw us versus the religious version of us that we sometimes project. He prefers us when we're real and raw. And he already knows what you're feeling. And you just need to learn to release those things to God. I mean, you read through some of the Psalms, some of the imprecatory Psalms of David, and some of them, you just read them and you go, how in the world did this get canonized? I mean, how did this get in the Bible? Because we see holy guys in the Old Testament, like Elijah and David, giving vent to their anger, to their fears. David will pray things like, "God, I hate my enemies. I want you just to kick in their teeth." And I think the reason that we see the prophets of old, these saints of old in the Old Testament praying and God not correcting their prayers is that many times we just need to vent our fears and our frustrations with God. And he actually wants that. He wants us to come to him and to be honest. Now, a little disclaimer here. I think there's a difference between venting for God and just shaking your fist at God and cursing. Because he is not irreverent. And David's not irreverent when he's giving vent to his anger, his frustrations, or just telling God, "I feel like I'm just hung out here to dry." So you can be reverent as you vent, and don't forget who God is, but be honest and release the things that we have been holding on to and stuffing in life. All right, so after allowing Elijah to rest and vent, the Lord reminds him in the story that he's not alone. So after addressing physical burnout, the emotional wall that Elijah has hit, he reminds him that he's not alone. So we need to rest. We need to release our fears and frustrations. But many times as men, we need to remember that we're not alone. So emotionally, Elijah feels like he has been hung out to dry and he's the only prophet left alive in Israel. So in verse 10, he says, "I'm very zealous for Yahweh, the God of hosts, for the people have forsaken your covenant. They've thrown down your altars, killed your prophets with the sword. And I only am left, and they seek my life to take it away." Was that true? Was Elijah the only prophet left in Israel? Was he alone in this story?
No.
No. And God will remind him, "Elijah, you're not alone." And so down in verse 18, God tells him, "Yet I will leave 7,000 in Israel, and all the knees of those who have not bowed down to Baal, every mouth that has not kissed him." But then we have the call of Elisha. And so God brings a friend to him. And I love this about the story, because we read it in the first couple of verses. The angel says to Elijah, "This journey is too great for you." And the truth of it is, guys, I mean, the Christian journey, the journey of life, it's too much for us to do on our own. It's too much. I mean, the journey is too difficult for us. The journey is too hard. And so God in grace gives Elijah a community, and we need one too. I don't know if you guys saw from the Boston Marathon that just happened this year, there was an amazing story of people hitting the wall in this race. And there was a photo, I think Mike has it here, of runners that were almost ready to finish the race. And the guy in the middle, can you tell who's hit the wall? The guy there has definitely hit the wall. And these runners are ready to finish the race. Many, you know, runners, they're trying to get the best time possible. And they see this guy, like, out of gas, unable to finish the race. And they come alongside him, and they each take an arm, and they help this guy out. And you know what, guys? This is a beautiful picture of the Christian life. I can't tell you how many times in my life God has sent a man into my life, a friend into my life, to come alongside me, to take an arm and say, "Hey, let's finish this race together." Last year, I was at a retreat, the Black Butte men's retreat that's coming up here like in a couple months. And I just hit a wall. Like Elijah, I was feeling really discouraged, really just depressed. Like, man, Lord, my wife and I, we've been trying to manage a budget since we've been married, and we suck at this. Like, we're really, really bad about talking about money. I get insecure. I get angry. 90% of our fights are about money. I know that you guys probably can't relate to this. I flunked out of financial peace university because we started having all these fights. And I'm just being honest. And so we're not swimming in debt, but we've always wanted to kind of have a shared vision of our finances. And honestly, I just ran out of gas and kind of given this area of my life just over to just a category going, you know what, we're just not winning there, and there's many other things that are great, and I just feel defeated here. And the Lord just brought a friend into my life over the last couple of years. Many of you guys know Eric Larson. He's just a good buddy of mine. And we were driving up the Black Butte. I'll never forget this. And Eric was talking about how his dad taught him how to manage money. And I just started weeping. And I was like so embarrassed because I never learned that, like, from my dad. Like, my dad just never taught me what to do with money. And for the first time, I just realized there's this whole area of my life where I've been just hitting a wall. And Eric said, "Bud, I'd love to, like, meet with you and coach you and teach you things that my dad, like, taught me. I'd love to do that." And it has been one of the greatest, like, gifts, both to me and my wife, to actually just go, you know what, I'm hitting a wall here, and I need a friend. I don't just need a Dave Ramsey book. Like, I do need a Dave Ramsey book, but I need a friend to help me through this and this to happen. And so I don't know what that is in your life, but maybe you need a friend. Like, you need to invite somebody in to that part of your life where you just feel like, I'm just under the broom tree. Like, I've tried everything I can do, and I'm just hitting a wall. Trust that if you pray, God, show me a man I can invite into this thing, that the Lord will open your eyes and bring in Elisha. You're not alone. I mean, we might not have 7,000 men here, but there's more than a couple. And so God has a man, a friend, set apart for you and whatever that issue is in your life. If it's porn, you're not alone. If it's finances, you're not alone. If it's your marriage and you feel like, man, we have totally hit a wall. We're so disconnected. I don't know how we're going to make it through this. You're not alone. Reach out. Ask the Lord to send a friend into your life. Lastly, thank you for the amen. After we realize that we're not alone, the most important lesson in this story is we have to refocus our attention off our circumstances, off our emotions, off our feelings, and refocus our attention back on the Lord. That ultimately is what this story leads us to, is God is going to refocus Elijah's attention, because there's all this I language in this story. I only am left. I. He's going to get him out of the focus on himself and his circumstances back to focusing on him. It's in verse 11 and 12. He tells Elijah, go out and stand on the mount before the Lord, and behold, Yahweh passed by, and a strong wind tore the mountains and broke it in pieces, the rocks before the Lord, but the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake, but the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, the sound of a low whisper. Now, this is amazing. I love how God reveals himself to Elijah in this encounter here, because it's not only spectacular. I mean, God kind of puts on this like pyrotechnic display of his power, but then you have this strange phrase where God wasn't really in the pyrotechnics. Like, he wasn't in the spectacular. He was in this low whisper. In verse 12, after all this, after the fire, he hears the sound of a low whisper. In Hebrew, it literally can be translated that the Lord was in the sound of sheer silence. And so this is really interesting about this story, because so many times in life we feel like God's silent, that he's absent. And if there's any story in the Bible that should teach us as men that when God feels silent or when God seems silent, he's still sovereign and he's still at work, it's this one. God could have revealed himself in the fire, but he didn't. And so many times in life we expect God to answer from heaven and to do it in some spectacular ways, to shake things up with like an earthquake, or to show us in some super evident way that he's with us. But many times we have to seek God in the silence. We have to quiet our heart and listen for the whisper of God to remind us that he's still sovereign, he's still in control, that he still loves us, that Jesus, on our worst days, is still Emmanuel. He's still with us. Jesus said, I'll never leave you, I'll never forsake you. And so many times in life, when God feels silent, we take our eyes off of the Lord, and we put them on our circumstances, and we feel like God he's given up on me, he's abandoned me. And just because God seems silent does not mean God's not present. And so God reminds Elijah that he's with him, that he's for them. And I don't know where you're at in life, if God seems silent right now, but you need to know that Jesus is still with you, that he is right alongside you, and whatever you're facing, whatever wall you're hitting right now, our Lord and Savior said, I'll never leave you. I'll never forsake you, even in times in life where you feel like I'm silent.